Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanika Oberhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Edna White. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
So great to have you here. I'm really excited. So I'd like to ask you a question that I enjoy asking everyone who comes on my podcast, usually at least. How did you come to see the world the way you do today?
I think I came to this position by understanding that my spiritual journey is mine. It's not anyone else's. It's no one else's value. It's mine. And learning to really have a relationship, because that, you know, relationship with my spiritual, you know, power or God, universe, I came to that myself.
Would you like to elaborate on how that came about and where it started and where you started realizing you needed to find your own path?
Sure. So as a young child, I was raised by my great grandparents who lived in the South. And they were God-fearing, which was different for me to understand when I came to New York. They were God-fearing, meaning that it wasn't an outward, you know, speaking about it or anything like that. It was more of how they treated or related to other people. And my great grandparents were some of the freed slaves down there that owned their own businesses. And my great-grandfather owned his own farm. I can't tell you how many acres, but I remember seeing all the people there working and everything. And he was one of the providers for one of the markets there close by that he had to take a bus to. But anyway, I think I learned it from them. And I remember coming here to New York and I hated it. You know, it was such a culture shock for me. And I hated it because I was free to do whatever I wanted when I was down there. And it's like, it was running area. It was no noise. It was just, you know, I could play with crickets. I could play with frogs, you know, things like that. It was a total culture shock when I came here on Long Island. And I remember writing a letter to God, never read a Bible, nothing. And I remember telling God to get me out of here. And so I think I laid it down or something. My mom found it and she says, "How do you know about God?" I said, "I don't think I know. I just know him, you know." And she said, like that, you know, and let it be. But later on in life, as life kind of like impeded me and things, you know, tragedies and perpetrations really came into my life. I got mad at God because he did leave me. And when I was 19, I think, you know, 18 or 19, I joined a church and I stayed there for many years, maybe about 29. And I worked and I did, you know, all that that you commit to do. But when I got to be about the age of, my son was, I think he was like 4 or 5. And I started really questioning why this is not happening, why that's not happening, what's going on. And not knowing that I was really talking to God all the time, because what religious order taught me is that he was somewhere out here. And I didn't learn that until later, that he was in here already. And I didn't have to ask or petition, he was already here. So when, it was 2006 and it was New Year's Eve, I was coming from church and I had already had some intrepidation, was talking to, you know, asking the pastor different questions. That was really like bothering me about, you know, why is this? Why is that? What is it? And I was asking the why stuff, you know, and there really wasn't any answers. And I was really getting like really sad, like sad and confused. But I was already hearing God say to me, hey, you got other things to do. And I, of course, I was ignoring it for maybe over 10 years. I was hearing it. I was ignoring it. So it got down to the point that I guess I couldn't ignore it any longer, the call. And so I was coming home from a shut-in service that we had. And I was coming home, and it was like early in the morning, and it was really foggy. It was New Year's Eve. It's really foggy, and I was driving. And I'm not a fast driver anyway. My kids always tease me. But I was driving about 30, and I couldn't see. Then I kind of slowed down but by the time I started to slow down, I hit a deer. And the deer, you know, I hit it, and it was like I was going crazy, like trying to figure out how to drive through it. And I remember feeling my wrist pop. And then I was like, I lost control. When I looked to the left, I hit an oncoming car. And we crashed, but I kind of dislodged from it, only to see the second deer, which was like this big, large, I want to say it was a male deer with horns. And it was just huge. So I tried to swerve, so I couldn't hit that again. So once I did that, I swerved and hit another car, but not as hard as the first car, and just slammed into a pole. At that point, I just felt like I felt the metal hit my chest, not knowing that it had crushed my whole right side. It crushed my hip, my ankle, my foot. Everything was crushed in this side. So I know it was God's grace, because I tell this story to everybody that it was one of the best days of my life, because I knew now I was able to have a relationship with God on my own without any assistance, without, you know, anything, no apparatuses, nothing. And so when I went to the hospital, they, you know, what was amazing about it was I always left church with my Bible sitting on the side of one seat, because I was always by myself, because the kids had gotten older. And then I put my phone in the case of the Bible so that it's sticking out. And just so happened that when I crashed into a fireman, ex-fireman. He was he had retired from fireman. And he's like, I remember him busting the window open, but everything was red because I had, you know, my nose was broken, everything here, I was cut here. And I remember seeing all red, and he just kept saying, you'll be all right, you're gonna be all right. I'm calling the ambulance. So I remember him grabbing the phone, and he called the last person that I called, which was my mom. And, you know, that's how they knew that where I was going. So I went to the hospital, and I remember talking and just my daughter was near me, and she goes, Mom, do you know what happened? And I was like, you know, just get me up. You know, I didn't realize that I had a car accident. I wasn't any pain, felt nothing. But I started to feel like I couldn't breathe. And I was like, I can't breathe. And I didn't know that I had two collapsed lungs, and I was talking, so that, you know, doctor came in right away. She got to put her, I was induced into a coma. So I remember all of that, but one distinct feeling when I came back, when I like started to heal, was I was in a room with another lady who was from England, and she was here visiting, but she had gotten sick, but they found out she had cancer. She had to stay here, and she had a double mastectomy. So we were in the same room, and we were talking or whatever. And I was feeling really sorry for myself. And I was like, you know, they can't see that I'm an evangelist. They can't see that, you know, I'm God's child. There's all these things are roaming through my head, right? Going through my head. And I'm like, so I'm a singer. Well, I was. I don't sing now, but I sang in church a lot. And I remember my family came, and they wanted me to sing, and I was like, I can't sing because my voice. I just had the incubation taken out of my throat, and I was like, yeah, my voice is gross. So I started singing, and they made me. So I started singing a song that what God has for me is for me, and I was singing it. And then I started to cry. They started to cry. And then the lady next to me, she heard me singing, and she didn't really say anything while they were there. And then when they left, they said, "You have such a beautiful voice." And I said, "Thank you." So that night, she wasn't doing too good. She kept moaning and crying. And she's like, "I'm in pain." And they were giving her medication or whatever. So I said, "You're right. You want me to call you somebody?" I said, "No." She said, "Could you do me a favor and sing that song?" So I sang the song. And of course, I'm crying. and pretty soon I didn't hear her. So I was like, okay. So maybe she went to sleep. And then I fell asleep because they were giving medication. I fell asleep. So the next day, I think it was, I really couldn't see her because they were taking me to therapy. I didn't really see anything, what was going on. And then I happened to ask, and her son came in. And I was like, "Well, where is she? She went to therapy." And he goes, "No, she passed away last night." And he said, "The front desk told me you were singing to her." I said, "I really didn't know her, but she asked me to sing." And he said, "I want to say thank you." And that's when I knew that who I was didn't depend on Bible or script, certification or anything. I knew who I was dependent on who I was in relationship and how close that relationship was. And so embarked my journey. Once I started to heal, it took me about 8 months to walk. I was in the hospital 45 days and I started to walk I got out like February and started to walk around May. So, I scooted down the stairs. It's a whole long process, but I began to walk. And my first time I wanted to get out and I wanted to see this particular pastor, and I got a group of friends together and said, "We'll go with you." So we got a van, we went down there and I wanted to see him. And I wasn't really walking, I was using a walker, but I said, "I'm going to go because I need to see him. I need to see what he says," because I believed in what he said. Because he always talked about have your own relationship with God. I can't tell you what to do, how to say it, where to be. I'm here just as instruction, And I remember, and he just stuck so close to me in mind. When I went to him, he was so happy to see me because he had heard that I died because I had a very slim chance of living and all of that great stuff. But I had such an awakening with him that we actually authored a book together called The Keys to the Kingdom. And it talked about the Beatitudes in relationship with healing in the body. And we actually worked together. And I knew that I felt the connection to God more so ever alone in my own pain than I ever did 29 years in the church. Because I was not forming a relationship with him. I was forming a relationship with religion. And it's not religion. It's really the forming the relationship in here. And I was forming it out there. And I equate that to me being a hurt child, going into the hospital, I had been through bad things in my life. So I figured this couldn't hurt if I went to the church, it couldn't hurt. And maybe it'd make me better, which it gave me foundational truths. But I learned early that once you get the foundational truths, it's time to now go out and find out what God has for you to do. And I didn't know any better, but I'm grateful for that foundational truth at this point, because I think I've built a lot of houses in 29 years. And I will say that I've grown from that, and I will tell everyone that it's a personal relationship with God that I learned. I mean, I got it. Like, I got it. And it's so important to have, because one thing I did learn, and once I got my bearings, when I went out on my own and I sat with my pastor, and I told him, I said, "It's time for me to go. It's been time for me to go. I just need to see what God has for me." And God has opened so many amazing doors for me that I could never believe that I would be part of. You know, I went to teach in China for English as a second language. And, you know, a lot of people said, oh, the communists did this and that. When I tell you I went there, it was a whole different picture. It was Christian, Chinese people. There were Muslim, there were all religions there. But then I took a trip to Beijing, and I went on to the Great Wall, and I went into Confucius Castle. So in his castle, they have the lineage, his lineage, written on a wall. And so I'm looking at it. And I got to remember, I'm a Westerner. I'm going to another country. I'm a Westerner, and I'm going, and I'm looking at it. And each of the, I guess, the drawings were similar to Jesus Christ coming here. So I'm going, well, this is scaring me. So one of the, I'm getting upset. I'm like, well, this is, doesn't make any sense. And so I call one of my Chinese friends and said, what's going on? I don't understand why this is similar to Jesus Christ. So she looked at me and she said, do you think Westerners have the only Messiah? And I was so afraid. I was like, what? What are you talking about? She goes, there's many forms, but they all lead to God. And it that saying right there, just like, whoa. I sat and cried for a little while because I was like, whoa. It just opened up so much understanding. But the real goal was to get to God. And that's, and use the skills that he has, that we have. And that really changed my life again. You know, and I went to China by myself. My son was 23 and I left. They were all living on their own, but I left. And I was like, I know this is what God wanted for me. And I spent an entire, just an amazing time learning and being in the world and being able to learn how to love them. So I now knew what my foundation was about, is to share love for them. It wasn't to preach nothing. It was to live in love to other people as I travel. So ever since then, I've been traveling since. So now I see the world in a non-judgmental state. I don't judge anybody. I don't even hear their words, what they're talking about. I literally see their souls. I feel their energy. And that's where I live.
Wow, that's very touching. Very, very touching to be willing to open up that way. You know, to say, okay, I was focused on Jesus Christ. And now I'm willing to see that everyone get these messages. This connection is for everyone, and it's not in one form. I think that's so beautiful. Yeah,
took me a long time, though. I'll tell you that.
yeah, it's not easy to change one's views if one has a certain way of seeing things that one grew up with and got used to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's so funny. We, you know, if you think about it, and I always think about when I was 5 years old writing this letter, and I remember writing it. And my mom, like, literally found it. I had put it somewhere. She literally found it. But it's like going back to that place where there was no question who God was, that you didn't need to have anybody tell you anything. You were certain about yourself. You were certain about the world. That place was like, you know, so precious. Like, I remember falling off the swing and cracking my eye, right? And was bleeding. And so I went to the hospital. My mom brought me in the hospital. So where do you think I went? I went right back to that swing that I just hurt myself on. Why? Because God gave me such confidence in here that I was able to, it was no inhibitions. It was no worries. Yeah, I'm going back in that swing, even though it hurt me, I'm going back, you know? And it's so much confidence that God instills in us that along the way of life, we lose, whether it be perpetration, you know, people, you know, mistreating you, people talking about you, people hurting you, it kind of packs on and you lose that. But once you gain that back, once you did, like, you remove all of that stuff and really connect to the Holy Spirit, because this in here is the Holy Spirit to there of God, you know? And once you do that, it's so radiant that you can't stop what it does. Like, sometimes I do have issues, you know, we all have issues in life and there's sad times, but you can't help but to see the good. Every time I'm going, why do I do that? Because I've unearthed, I've dug out and I cleaned out all of that stuff that was on top of my spirit, my connection to God.
So beautiful. And of course, in Miracles, it speaks about this as well, about letting the Holy Spirit remove the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. And that sounds exactly like what you have experienced.
Yeah, it really has. It really is.
Now that you've gained this insight into the way you see the world and how you approach it, mm-hmm. what did you make out of it? You wrote a book, obviously. You spoke about that. What else did what other fruits came from this transformation?
So importantly, I became a counselor, but I'm also a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And, I always wanted to help other people. And I wrote another book. I wrote it when I was in my 30s, but I didn't release it until I was about almost 40, because I was afraid, to write it, to let everybody know about it. But once I released it, it became a bestseller for this organization called RAIN, and it's against rape victims and trauma. And I went to speak for them. And that opened up an area for me to have a platform to really talk about, how to overcome that and being your authentic self, because you start to unearth that, I talk about my life for the accident. I talk about the accident all the time because that was a miracle for me. And I know, I had a whole lot of broken bones. I know, I get it. I had so many broken bones and I had to recover a long way. But the scripture says, how can he give you new wine if an old wineskins? The way I was feeling, the way I was going, what I was doing was not bearing any fruit. But when this happened to me on New Year's Eve, 2006, 2007 was different, and on was different. I started to see things differently and embrace things differently. Embrace life like it's my last breath. And you know how we used to say that? We always said, live life like it's your last day. Yeah, I used to say it, but I didn't do it. I didn't do it at all. But now I do it. Like, this is, I'm going to enjoy life like it's my last day. So what I can do, I do. If I want to walk outside and it's snowing and it's all the way up to my chest, I'm going to walk outside and I'm going to do it. I'm going to embrace life and take life by the horns and just enjoy it. So many times we get wrapped up in our own junk. It's not really our own stuff, our own junk. But now I don't get wrapped up in my own junk. I relationships are key for me. So if I can't keep it in peace, I create boundaries to keep it not to go in pieces, if that makes sense. But I try to do that. Every relationship, my mom and I, we had a very volatile relationship all most of my adult life as a teenager as well. And not until my 50s, I was 50, did I decide, hey, I gotta make this right. This is what God requires of me, is to at least try to make it right. At least. And as we talked about things we didn't talk about, that we were tiptoeing around, and we were really in the house by ourselves. Like I was literally had to stay with her because I'd lost everything, but I was with her. And I asked God, I said, "Hey God, what's this about? I'm 50. I got to go live with my mom until I find something. What's going on?" And that was what it was. I stayed there a year and a half, and I stayed there because I had to get our relationship right. And I appreciated that. I appreciate God really orchestrating that. And I try to turn all my hurts into, you know, stages of like, there's a hallelujah moment or whatever it is. I try to make it that way, because in that time, you know, certain periods in your life, you think it's a bad thing. But then if you look at it, and you really look at it from the spiritual sense, you'll say, "Hey, I gained this amount of friends. I got this. I got that." Everything was new for me. Everything was new. Every morning I woke up was new. I woke up saying, "It's a great day. You know, it's going to be a great day." And when I didn't say it, it wasn't a great day. But I was always I wake up. It's going to be a great day. You know, it's going to be a great day. And just before I was coming on here, my youngest son came over and he was like, "Mom, I was talking to somebody and she looks older than you." And he said, "But you had to come back from being all broken up and you're stronger than they are." And I was like, "Well, I think that's where I am supposed to be. And I think that God is just like preserving me because I woke up, you know, I woke up." And there's a state of awareness that things change for you. This really just wakes you up. And like, it's not even, it's more than just waking up, you know, it's so fresh. Everything's fresh. Everything is love. Everything's like, they've got this little aura around it. That's love. That's love. So if you were one to talk and gossip about somebody, if you see somebody, "Oh, look at what they got on," you know, when I look at people now, like, "Wow, she's got a cute face. Or she's got those colors. I think I really would like those." I start to see the good stuff instead of what I used to see was the all like, "Oh, that gossiping, you know, or this guy, oh, he's going, you know, he's going to hell," presuming what God is presuming over somebody's life. I would now know how to stay in my place and say, "Oh, all I'm supposed to be doing is loving that person. If they come in contact with me," but I have new eyes. I have new ears. Stuff that I used to put up with, I don't anymore. As a childhood sexual abuse survivor, I would, you know, cower to things and let things happen, or, you know, listen to things and let things, you know, just happen, or hear things. Now I don't do that. It's like I stake my boundaries. "Hey, I don't want to hear that. I don't want that inside of me, you know. I don't want to be around that." I'm able to choose who I want to be around that lifts me up and that actually has the right energy around me.
Yeah, very powerful choices and a very, very beautiful way of using what you experienced for good.
Yeah. Yep. I do that all the time.
And I think it's so beautiful that you know that in A Course in Miracles it also speaks about seeing through Christ's eyes, right? Yeah. And mm-hmm. if I think about what one might describe that as, I think what you're describing sounds a lot like what it must be like. I haven't come to that point, but I'm very happy you have this insight, and it's very beautiful to hear it. And to
it's a lot of work. It really is.
So seeing through the eyes of loving and saying that's my only purpose here is to love. How does this affect the way you interact with people? Because you were already speaking a little bit about that, but but maybe you want to go a little deeper into it.
I think what happens, and I'm gonna sum this up to what my best friend said to me. We went to a restaurant, right? And so I said, this is the first time we're ever going to this restaurant. It was like way down somewhere. And you had to really look for it, but it was amazing. So I love amazing food. So I'm like, I just love it. I'm not a foodie. I just love when I get exciting food, you know, because when I travel, I love to have like all my senses popping. So this one restaurant I took my friend to, we always go out to, we make our plans to go out at least every 2 weeks to a new restaurant. Okay. So we go to this restaurant, sitting there eating. I'm like, oh my gosh, just so good, so good, so good. So we're eating and we're having like a great meal. So I walk up to the front and I'm talking to the owner. And so she touches me, she puts a hand on me like she knew me for years. And we're talking and I'm saying, this is a great place. You know, I just want to tell you that my meal was exquisite, blah, blah, blah. And so I walk away. And so my friend says, you know her? I said, no. And she goes, figures. So when you are in that place that there's love will prevail, people will accept you and you can talk. You're talking to people more than you would ever believe you were. You know, if you're introvert, extrovert, they feel the energy before they even open your mouth. I didn't even say anything to her. I said, excuse me. That's all I said. And she grabbed my hand and put her hand on my, like my hand. And like, she knew me for years. The energy precedes itself when you are in the place of what Jesus was. They just knew him, you know? And one of my affirmations when I was starting on this journey, you know, to really understand where God wanted me to be, is just that I want them to know me before I walk in the room. And I don't know why I said that. And my friend said, what are you talking about? I said, when I walk into a room, I don't want to announce myself. I want them to know who I am. And she said, what? She said, what do you want that for? I said, because I want to live a life that it radiates. And I don't know why I'm saying this, but that it radiates, that I don't have to make this big announcement. I don't have to dress like all fine and cute and all this stuff, you know, but I just want to be me and it reverberates through the room. And that I, you know, that I'm comfortable in the room that I'm in or people know me. And I didn't know what I was saying at the time, right? But now that through when I was thinking about the Course of Miracles, when Jesus was walking around, right? They knew who he was and he never said his name. And it brought back, I was like, wow, why did I? And I was saying that. Now, I wasn't saying that because of me. I was saying because it was, I wanted to be closer to God. My thoughts were being closer to God. Now, how is that being closer to God? I'm being closer to God because I want them to know me by my energy. I want them to know me for who I am. They don't have to have to know my name. But when that woman grabbed my hand, and it happens a lot. It happens whenever I go out, I'm kind to someone. You know, it's not always giving money to people, but it's really a smile. And it's, you know, hey, you know, thanks for holding the door, you know, that kind of thing. But the energy comes out of me without me even forcing it. It's not even a thought.
Yeah, that's really great. And you have a lot of experiences with that. And yeah. And I think it's very powerful also that you're able to speak about it and that you share about it and that you even write about it and publish it so people can read it. I mean, and now you're on podcasts. I'm sure it's not your first, I bet.
No, you know what was it really exciting too? When I was at my mom's house, right? And I was like, okay, God, what, you know, what's going on, you know? And it was, I had lost everything. Where I was living, the owners never told me they were in foreclosure. So when I came home, everything I owned was locked inside. I couldn't get it unlocked. I couldn't do anything. And I literally left my home with the clothes that I had on my back and in my car. We searched and searched for all my stuff. I was really upset, not about the clothes and stuff, but I was upset about my pictures of my children. That's what I was upset about. I love my pictures. But I said, God, what are you doing? And that scripture came to me, you know, how can I put new wine? Now, I thought that I was broken enough, right? I thought I was broken enough. No. He had to say, he had to now another level. This is another level. You know, it's not about this stuff here. And that's what he taught me. It's not about the stuff here. And that's what I learned out of. It's not about the stuff. It's not even about the pictures. It's not even about the pictures. It's about what memories are you passing on? What are you saying? What are you giving? Because literally the Bible wasn't a Bible. It was word of mouth. So what are you giving to the next generation? What can they say that you did that was beneficial to them? What could you do? And that's what I learned out of that. So ever since then, I've been going, like, making memories. I got grandkids, I make memories with them. I am out there making memories. But I say all of that to say that we're here as a live written book, a live written book. And what we do, what we say, matters every day to people. We may not even realize it, but it happens. It's there. It's awesome the way it happens. When I wrote the book stuff, I didn't think it was going to go international. A young girl called me on Facebook and said, I got your book. And she was part of a satanic ritual. And she was rescued by, I think, the foster care system or something like that over where she lived in the UK. And she said, I just wanted you to know that this book helped me. I can't believe how it helped me. And the story, the way you tell your story, I can't wait to be strong as you to tell my story. And I said, just take your time because it took me 40 something years to heal. I promise you, you'll heal, but just take your time. And she said, I bought your book and I didn't think that I was going to get as much as I got out of it, but I'm glad I did. I just want to tell you, I'm from the UK and I got something out of your book. And I couldn't believe it. But you never know who you're going to touch, and you got to make your life that written word so that everyone, even your generations especially, get something out of it.
Yeah, that's a fascinating point, because when you get this relationship and you get some answers, like, you know, you go through some really hard stuff. Everyone has their own stuff where they think it's the hardest thing to go through. Some are very physical, some are very mental, some are very emotional, or some mixture of all of it. But anyways, there are these moment, these times in which we're really, really struggling. Yeah. And I think it's very fascinating how some of the answers why you are helpful or how you are helpful can be like you're saving lives and you don't even know it, right? Or you're healing minds. You're giving people space to heal their minds and you don't even know it, right? So we really don't know what anything is for that we're doing.
Exactly. And
so, like, you know, I don't know how many people I'm actually reaching with this podcast or how many people are gaining from the stories told here and the people and all the guests, but I know that it's important work, right? And it's important to share it.
That's correct.
And that's the beauty of it. And it astonishes me, because one of the beautiful messages that I got was, come from where you are at. So I'm at the spot where I'm at now.
That's right.
and it has enabled me to do these these podcasts.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. But one of my mentors said to me, and he's all, you know, it's two men that always, I look to them to help me do a lot of things. So I'm telling him, I'm on this podcast now. I'm a life coach, life and entrepreneurial coach. And I'm also a public speaker. And I said, I don't know what my new podcast and it's called Keeping It Real on Purpose. And I talk to thought leaders such as yourself and entrepreneurs and authors, because, you know, I know how it is to be an author and need somebody to kind of boost you up, you know? And when I started, it was during the pandemic, and I was like, I was just on there just to vent, you know, and then all of a sudden it just blew up to this thing, you know, this amazing thing. And I was touching lives everywhere. I was talking about subjects that I would not even talk about. But I would say to you that just when you think that you're not doing it, you're doing it. So he says to me, he said, what are you worried about? I said, I'm worried because I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. He said, it's just a different platform. You're doing what you're supposed to do, just in a different platform. He says, you're an evangelist. You're evangelizing on a different platform. That's not on the stage. When he said that to me, I was like, now why didn't I think of that? So you're just on another stage. That's all. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's very important, because I think that was something that touched me deeply, is that where you are at is helpful.
Yes, it is. Yeah, exactly.
And even if you're struggling, you're struggling. Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where you're at. I mean, I'm struggling. Okay.
That's it. That's and it. People will appreciate you when you walk through and you're learning how to, you know, you're struggling, but you're still helping them. You're struggling, and then you're still helping them. But wait, you're easing up on a struggle. Now you got through. You can share that with them. Hey, I got through that. This is what I was doing. What's happening with me? I got through that. It's more relatable than somebody just, you know, comes up and everything's all right, you know? And that's what God really wants us to know, is the way Jesus lived is regular, like a human person, you know? He had anger issues. He had issues with friends. He had issues. He had issues, you know what I'm saying? Because he could have talked about the lady at the well like everybody else did, but he didn't. You know, he could have said, hey, my friends are dirt because they want to do whatever they want. Like, they went to sleep while I was up here praying. They went to sleep. I could have left them, but he didn't. You know, it was just regular practical things that he went through. But that's what it really taught me, is this practical things that we as humans go through, that we really have to show love and we have to view it in love. See, we forget about, we say show all the time, but we don't hear in love. We don't, do we have four, what do you got, four or five senses? I think it is. Right? We don't, none of those we love. We don't take care, we don't take those in consideration. We worry about these two hands that touch everything. But we don't worry about what we see when we see things, is it in love? When we hear things, is it in love? When we speak things, is it in love? You know, when we taste things, is it in love? Is it, you know, and I, you know, I like I said, I love food. And I love food that's tasty and has all the vegetables, all the everything. Just love it all. Just it smells great, everything. You know, are we doing all of that in love? That's the key. It's not just the hands, it's all the five senses.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we're struggling, we're going through all of this, and we're still providing platforms, we're still sharing, we're still connecting with each other. Yep. And this opens up a lot, you know?
Yeah, it does.
And you know, if you, it's also funny, you know, some people are like, why am I chosen, right? I'm struggling, I'm going through hell here, you know, in my mind and in my life. Why do you choose me to go out there and speak with people and share and so on, right? And
that's why
it's like, okay, but I'm willing, right? And of course in miracles it says, you know, all you need is a little willingness.
Yes.
It, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be done. You don't have to be there or anything.
Yeah,
a little willingness is enough, and the Holy Spirit can do the rest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure, totally true.
So I think it's very fascinating when you spoke about, you know, everyone saying this and that about China, and then you went and worked there, and you you got to get to know things that you wouldn't have known if you hadn't been there. There was no chance that you could have guessed that it was like that, but you accepted to go and teach there.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, and thought it was nice that you spoke about, you know, people who found value in what you were sharing, who had went through, you know, brainwash or things like brainwash or things, similar things. And I think that's in a very important subject. You know, how do you go beyond that? Because, you know, there's people who get out of it, but they're not healed. They're still struggling like crazy.
Right.
Or people who went through what you went through.
Right.
Sexual abuse and childhood abuse and all these things that people go through. I mean, how do you come out of it? And you've found a way of using all of that as a superpower, which I think is really fascinating.
Yeah, I really did. I didn't know it was a superpower at that moment. I was just like, okay, I gotta change this, you know, and I gotta really turn this around. Literally, I think my oldest granddaughter came to stay with me at that time. She was living in Georgia. So we went down to Georgia when I had the car accident. And we went down to Georgia, so we picked her up on the way back. She stayed with me for the entire summer through school, after school. So the way that I was eating, I was eating very healthy and I was walking. She had to walk me. So my routine was, I was upstairs in my house, and so it was 12 steps down, 12 or 15, one or two. And so I had to walk down. I didn't walk down. I scooted down on my butt. She would meet me at the bottom of the stairs with the walker, walk me to the living room. That was the first day. They didn't let me scoot back upstairs and do this all again. The next day, I would go to the porch, and I would take one step at a time. And that's what taught me everything is one step at a time. You can't conquer it all. And every day I got something different out of the walk. And, you know, if I walked just to my living room, I would see the beauty this is a great living room. I set this up really nice. You know? I would appreciate it. Whereas if I was working, hey, yeah, this is the living room, you know, I wouldn't even appreciate it. You know, walking just outside on the porch, I could smell the air. Appreciating the air, just smelling the different air, you know, what's different with it, what's the same about it, you know, smelling the flowers. Totally. By the time, I think about the third year, I was walking 5 miles a day. 5 miles a day, that was my routine. And I remember God saying to me, I will be touching the leaves and just my music on, humming, you know, having a good old time with myself, calling myself, you know. And I remember God, it was a circle. It wasn't visible to everybody else is visible to me. It was a circle, just going circle, circle. It's like, what does that mean? And God said to me, I am one with you. You are one with me. That's when I knew I was really on the right track.
Wow. Yeah. This idea of step by step is also, you know, like this little willingness. When you allow a little love in, allow it to do its thing. You know, we don't know how it works. We just know that it's good. But we don't know how it works, and we wouldn't be able to do it ourselves.
Yes,
but it does its thing, and things happen that are amazing from it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And we don't always appreciate it, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. So I think that's beautiful that you appreciate that and appreciate the step-by-step journey.
Yeah.
And are thankful for that, because you could have also been annoyed with it. You said, my God, this is so annoying. Yeah. I'll never get back to being able to walk around or do things again, right?
Yeah.
And that is a worry that you can have when you're going through troublesome times like that, right? That you won't be able to do anything again, right? Or you can't function again.
Yeah.
And it's a real struggle to get back on your feet.
It is.
And you have, and it's a big, big, big patience issue.
Yeah.
it's incredible because you can't force things.
Yeah. And I don't think ever the whole time I thought about maybe I wanted to give up, but I didn't think like that. I was like, the doctor asked me and he's like, oh, you're going to have like a lot of arthritis and you're going to have this and you're going to have a limp. And I was like, I've rubbed myself on this and no, God didn't tell me that. And he looked at me, started laughing. He's like, he said, okay, God. I said, no, God didn't tell me that. He didn't tell me that. So he looked at me, started laughing, and I was calling my angel because I could have not been walking, but he said, no, this is what we're going to do because I broke my hip. My hip bone was crushed. It was just completely crushed. And right now I have like metal and a plate there, and he kind of built, Cooper, he kind of built an area for me to have a hip. He says, nah, she'll be all right. And so I remember saying to him, you're a little fat to be a doctor, right? So my daughter was like, oh my God, my mother's the worst. And so when I got better, I was always checking him out. And I was like, what's going on? She's like, I'm all right. You know, how's my girl doing today? He didn't call me because he thought that I was, you know, he couldn't believe my progress the whole time. You know, and he's like, all the time I'm waiting to see you to see what you look like because you always amaze me. I say, yeah, this ain't me. This is God doing this. You know, I'm special. Like, I was like, yeah, this is going to be great. I healed. My leg was a total different color 1 month. And in the next month, it all peeled off. And he said, I can't believe that this is happening this quick. And I was like, why not? And he's like, he said, yeah, right, why not with you? Why not? So the last time he walked in and I was looking at him, I said, hey, you lost some weight. He said, didn't you tell me I was fat? But you see how when God is in the picture, when you start to really line up with what God wants you to achieve, everyone is affected, whether you want them to be affected or not. They're affected.
Yeah, in A Course in Miracles, it affirms that as well. It says, you know, no one heals alone.
Nope.
No, that just doesn't happen.
It does not.
Yeah, and no miracle is just for you. Miracles always affect everyone.
Everyone involved. That is correct.
Yeah, so these are very powerful. And I think one of the other things you were speaking about is this trust and this confidence. You spoke about confidence, how you had this confidence.
Yeah.
And I think it's very remarkable because you're speaking about all of this in the midst, as part of an experience that physically was devastating.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, I try to think about all the entire situation. And I remember one time I just crying, right? And I was like, God, why am I going through this? And I remember laying back and all I could do was like wave my arms. And I remember just crying and I felt like this amazing bright light just surround me, right? And there was a nurse that was helping me, like, you know, she was giving me a bath and I couldn't even stop my hands from moving. Now I got a cast on this arm, right? So I'm like, you know, and I'm just waving my hands and my all of this is like sewn up. I had like 74 stitches here. And my head was the plate in my head here was shifted down over. My nose is broken. So I'm like a hot mess. I'm a whole hot mess. But I'm waving my hands and I'm crying and I feel this bright, amazing light around me. And I remember the lady was cleaning me, and so the other nurse came in and said, is she all right? Is she, you know, in distress? She goes, no, I think she's praising God. She said, just like, and I heard her say that, but I couldn't stop myself from what was happening at the moment. Like I couldn't stop. Like I wanted to stop, but I was just waving my hand and I felt, it was like, I felt this light. The next day, I couldn't talk. So my daughter came in and I wrote something for her. I said, I want you to get all these people. I had like a list of people. I want you to have them come here. She's like, why, mom, why? I said, you know, and I want them to come because I got to ask them for forgiveness. So she said, hey, mom. So she gave up and just said, she called everybody. She got in touch with everybody. Her and my baby son, they found everybody. That night, that day, I had like a line of people come to see me. And I was like, I was apologizing. Literally, I was apologizing for what I thought about somebody, what I felt about somebody. It was like 10 to 15 people I felt some type of way about, you know? And even, you know, there were people who were alive. There weren't anybody dead, you know, but they were all there and they were like, you know, they just thought I was gonna die. But I was like, nope, God told me to do this. Literally, I asked them to forgive me for even thinking. They's like, I don't even know you thought that. I was like, I don't care. If I die tonight, I don't want this. So this is bothering me. And what I can tell you that was awakening for me. That whole awakening happened in the hospital bed because not to even think bad about somebody was turned on. They didn't even know I thought like that, but I told them I thought like that and I asked them to forgive me. That's heavy, heavy. That was the most heavy experience. And I was crying all night because I was talking to everybody. I was trying to get it off my chest. Like, no, this is how I thought. And I didn't know, I wasn't moving in my own. It was the Holy Spirit literally. Nah, you gotta get this right. You know, that's how it was. And it was just so heavy. And my daughter said, Mom, you some kind of lady. That's all she said. And walked away from my bed. And because she was crying, Mom, you some type of lady. And walked away. And but they knew, but my, you know, I knew that God was really working with me.
Yeah, I think that's one of the central topics in A Course in Miracles as well, as forgiveness.
Yeah.
So in truth, there's nothing to forgive, but in our experience, we need to forgive because we're still full of ideas of separation and and all of that is full of guilt and accusations and drama and all kinds of stuff anyways. So I think that's very amazing that you were willing to do that. You know, let's say I'm going to say sorry for things that people didn't even know about and for things that they know about. And just because I feel called to do that, right? No matter how hard it is for me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you think that was part of the reason why your body also healed?
I do, because I had no, my daughter, I'll tell you, because my daughter said to me, I said, it was my birthday. It was just my birthday and Christmas. So they kind of give my gift at the same time. So she bought me these amazing boots that fit comfortably. I love them. They went with every outfit, right? So I was like, the only thing, you know what I was worried about? My boots. She's like, you're not worried about me? I was like, nah, I'll be all right. But they ripped my boots. But that day, you know, that the way God healed me was all the doctors, all the physician's assistants, there's like, we can't even believe that this even happened to you. Like people look at me now, you what? What happened? And I have to show it to them, you know, like I can, you know, they see the scar, but they, you know, but I have to show it to them for them to even know. Like the ones that really know is the ones at the airport because they see the metal, you know, but I know that it was that happening to me, that endowment from God was the reason why I'm healed to this day, to this very day.
And do you think that part of the reason you had these traumatic experiences was, which were not traumatic in the end effect, right, or in all the time, but because you had these enlightening experiences during it as well.
Yeah.
Do you think one of the reasons for that was guilt or things that you hadn't forgiven in your life that led to the accidents, or what do you think there was a cause for that? And then the healing was the remedy?
I believe in cause and effect, but there was a lesson that I needed to learn around all of it, because I was angry that I was sexually abused for so many years and nobody came to my rescue. I was angry that my life wasn't, as I saw it, normal. I was hurt, and I felt neglected all the time. I felt like I wasn't beautiful. I felt like I wasn't worth anything. So I believe I was like this diamond that was down in this earth and compacted on boom, 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 boom all the time, and didn't see my worth until somebody dug it up. And I believe God dug me up to let me shine. And those lessons I learned were just things that along the way I had to learn in order to be where I am now. Because if I didn't, I couldn't be here. I couldn't be as trusting to God as I needed to be in this time. You know, I couldn't rely on the universe to fight my battles. I couldn't. Because if I kept them around and not lived spiritually like I'm supposed to be, being a spirit being as acting as a human here, I wouldn't be able to. I would probably be a whole lot worse. I'm telling you, people always say, well, how did you not get involved in drugs? Why did you not do this or whatever? And I was like, well, that's because of God. I know it's because of God. I just know. I know it because of divine order of the universe. I know.
Yeah, many people, you know, have this idea that a child is innocent and doesn't comes to the world innocent. Mm-hmm. And of course, in miracles, it says we're all innocent anyways.
Yeah.
But we do not come to the world in the sense of feeling innocent, because the world is an idea came about through an idea of separation.
Right. Exactly.
So you cannot, the world, it can only be transformed by seeing innocence rather than guilt and so on. So you have to change your mind about it, according to A Course in Miracles. And you need the Holy Spirit for that.
Yep.
You can't do it on your own, because you have been listening to, or have been developing these ideas of separation for a long time that A Course in Miracles calls the ego. Yeah.
Too long and too much. You know? Too long and too much we've been listening to stuff. You know?
So in other words, you are coming to a world where separation is the norm, and you created that idea in your mind of separation.
Mm-hmm.
The world is there, according to A Course in Miracles. It wouldn't be an experience. It's not really there, but it's in your, you made up this idea of separation, and mm-hmm. therefore you're experiencing a world that, a dream that represents that separation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think it's very beautiful that you are seeing it that way, rather than, because yes, you're right. These people were saying, you know, you could have went to drugs, you could have become got into some of these other scenes, right? Because of having been abused. And they're like, I don't know, there's all kinds of things that could come from that. There's actually, I think there's no end to that. You know, there are all these ideas of separation you could play out because of thinking you're a victim, right?
Mm-hmm. And I could have took that mentality and became a victim, you know. Or I could have wanted revenge and leaned into revenge the whole time. I would have missed life altogether.
Yeah.
That's the scary thing, is that we could lean into a lot of things that have, you know, that want our souls to be soothed, but we've got to understand that's a reality that somebody else has painted for you, you know, wanting them to die, wanting all of those things I could have clinched onto.
Yeah, and absolutely.
That's not what I'm here for. Yeah, not my, you know.
You chose differently, and of course, America accepts you. You can always choose again, even if you make a wrong choice or a choice that feels bad. You can still choose again. And yes, what I think is also fascinating, that the idea that you find in the Bible as well, is your slate being wiped clean, right?
Yes.
And of course, in Miracles, it also says changing your mind actually can wipe all the stuff clean that you were before. And you actually only see love, and all you see that's left is love. And I think that's remarkable that you're able to see it that way, because like you said, you could have tapped onto the idea of revenge and gone for that, right, as well.
Yeah, I'm so happy that I'm there, because I just see so many, I talk to so many women, and you know, they're advocates for, you know, against trauma and everything. But they're so adamant about somebody has to pay, and the revenge is on their heart. And I was like, that goes into your body. I don't want anybody, you know, keeping me from not being happy. You hold on to that. One of the advocates I work with, she was riddled with cancer, riddled with it. I said, you have to let the fact that your abuser, he's dead and gone, you have to let it go, because if you keep holding on to it, waiting for revenge, you're not going to get it. All you're going to do is die, and you're not happy. You're miserable, and you know, and it comes out in your behavior. So you start to behave in an unloving manner, because you're obeying this reality that someone is telling you, hey, this is what it's supposed to be like. And I was like, it's not. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to see what I was like, wanted to have like some kind of revenge. Yes, I wasn't angry at my perpetrator. I was angry that no one listened to me. And I could have held on to that for dear life and used that as an excuse, but I didn't.
Yeah, another thing that holds people back is they think they can't be understood, that nobody understands them.
Yeah.
And I think that plays into what you were saying, right? Nobody's listening to me, right? Or nobody can listen to me meaningfully, meaning that they don't know what I'm saying or they don't understand me.
Yes.
And so I think that's, so how did you shift from that? You know, because to think that you said you have, when you were a child, you didn't feel heard or you didn't feel listened to. Yeah. You had the impression, and nobody was helping you, and this and that. How did you shift that? Because it sounds like you really shifted it to a different perspective.
Well, I'm going to tell you how I did it. I did. One day after a failed suicide attempt, I had my son with me. It was Christmas, and where we lived, there was a store called Sweezy's. We'd go there, and Santa was there. You could take pictures with him. He had like cartoon characters and all of that. So he wanted to go see Spider-Man. So I get on the bus. Now I'm still crying and all of this stuff. I'm crying, tears are coming to my eyes, and I'm with my 7-month-old. He's wiping my face. I'm taking him. I'm still miserable, but I'm still doing what I have, you know, to make him happy. I'm just miserable, crying. And I'm like, what the heck am I gonna do? You know, I'm really like just distraught. This lady walks past me and she's coming. I sat down. She's coming on the bus and she touched my shoulder. She said, "It'll be all right." I kind of figured, oh, she saw my tears. You know, okay, she knows. All right. She gets she pulls the bell before me because she gets off and a couple stops down. And so she pulls the bell and she gets off and she goes, "It'll be all right." Now, as she took her hand off of me, a car dropped. So what do you think that was on the car? It was a counselor who specialized in sexual trauma. Now, I say not one word to this woman. Not one woman word. She also told me tears. Literally, this woman that the counselor that she sent me to lived around the corner where my house was. I could walk there. Couldn't believe it. I went to her for several years. What I did was I was able to use the tools I already have, but because I was so distraught and so, you know, downtrodden, she just showed me how to use the tools I already had that God had already given me. I just needed somebody to spark a fire under me, you know? And when I did that, it was easier for me to start. It took me a while though. I needed a momentum, you know, but it took me a little while to get that momentum and get the teachings that I had inside of me that I already had that I can move forward. And each year I got better and better and better, you know. But then, you know, when I got into church, I just thought that's where I was supposed to be, you know, and I got there and did nothing, which hurt me more. And then I had to start again. But when I started again, I think forgiveness was the biggest piece for me, biggest piece. And it wasn't forgiveness to anybody else. It was forgiveness to myself. That was the first step. I had forgotten that. So forgive myself for what I didn't know. Forgive myself for saying okay when I could have said no. Forgive myself for not knowing. Was that?
Yeah. That forgiveness, that is a very deep thing, and there's very many levels that you can look at it from.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
I'm still looking at ways of forgiveness. It's still layers of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, in the Course in Miracles, it also says how forgiveness brings you peace. And that's something that's amazing, you know, because what it also says, you know, what would you value more than that? Nothing, right? But at the moment you're still valuing something that isn't valuable at all. Because when as long as you're listening to separation thinking, you're valuing what has no value at all. Mm-hmm. And so to actually change your mind and start valuing what really has value, but according to the many ways of thinking that are all separation thinking, of course, it says the opposite. It says that's not valuable, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Beautiful. So before we get into another subject, because there's so many more we can talk about, we've come to the point where we need to wrap up. So
yes.
Is there something you would like to share that I haven't asked you about yet before we finish?
I don't think so. I think you brought a lot of decades back to me being here today and being able to glean for some more wisdom with, you know, with your prompting and just me sharing, it's brought about some more wisdom, you know, within what I've already learned. And it was just a pleasure and a blessing to be here today.
Yeah, thank you very much. And if anyone wants to reach out to you or get to your book, how would they do that? Or your books?
I'm on LinkedIn as Edna J. White. I'm all over as Edna J. White. You can go on Amazon, look for all 23 or 24 of my books on Amazon, Edna J. White, and they're there.
Great, wonderful. So yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you to all listeners and all viewers. Please forgive us if the technology didn't make the image perfect this time, but we do get wonderful impressions of you, Edna.
Thank you.
So,
thank you for being here.
So thank you all. And if you want to be a guest on this podcast, please reach out to me. And please spread the word. And if you like the podcast or enjoyed it, please review it and follow it and subscribe. And if you want to join live, then join the Telegram channel where I have the live recordings. Yes. Blessings to you all, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Till next time.